Hi, I'm Steph.
And I'm Jules.
And welcome to The Babesment.
Steph is a body positive photographer.
And Jules is an intuitive eating and body image coach.
And we're passionate about empowering people to own their bodies and themselves so that they can live their biggest, boldest lives.
So join us as we celebrate the stories of incredible humans and the bodies they've lived them in. You too. Let's go, girls. I need everybody to know that that's like the fourth time Julie sang just that.
I don't know what's going on with me today.
It's like it's different than any other
day.
Well,
I mean, like with this song though, like why is Shania Twain in my head?
Because it's time to go.
There's a very short window of time that I loved Shania Twain. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I was like 10, 8, 9, 10, but vivid memories like. Truly a babe childhood memory is sitting on the little blue carpet in my bedroom, my yellow bedroom, listening to Shania Twain playing the Pokemon board game.
Wow. What a time travel.
In the Pokemon board game, I feel like not everyone
I don't think I had that.
The Pokemon board game was amazing.
I had Pokemon.
Amazing.
I had Pokemon on my Game Boy Color that I was really into.
Totally. Game Boy, the cards, fun. Board game
was lit.
It was lit.
I mean, listen.
I think I cheated for sure. I think I had like a really easy little way that I would cheat to win. I think that's play to win. I think.
Play to win, always. But I think I don't think I was ever a big like Shania fan, but that song will never not do it for me. Like,
right.
You know, she says, let's go, girls. And I'm like, let's go.
That's, okay, I'm having a mind fart. Let's go, girls. That's different from, man, I feel like a woman. It's the same song. This is funny. There was a Peloton ride I was doing recently and Cody played, that don't impress me much.
Ooh, also great.
And he kept being like, really? That doesn't impress you, Shania? Like, Brad Pitt impresses me. It was fucking hilarious. It was comedy. I mean, it was hilarious. I was like, Cody, you're so funny.
Listen, Brad Pitt does not impress me much.
He impresses me a lot.
He does impress me a lot. He's actually very talented.
He's
actually very talented.
That impresses me a lot.
Welcome back to the Babesment.
Hi,
that's Jules.
We're your hosts. That's Steph over there.
Well, hello, welcome.
I feel like we do owe our listeners a little swift update.
Ooh,
just to kind of clarify where things stand. You probably won't hear us talking about Taylor for a minute because of the announcement that we got.
Unless things change, but
which things could change.
As of time of recording, we have been told that Red will be re-released on November 19th. I did post that I felt that I was right. I did say
we
in May.
We really did think it was going to be
okay,
Red.
Beginning of us making conspiracies, we were like, Red's going to be next.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, it's 1989. I was like, no, it's Red.
Like 1989 made more sense because it makes the most sense for her to re-release her Grammy Award winning albums first. So it's a little weird that Red's coming next.
But also in my mind, knowing that she's been in like a folklore Evermore zone, like Red was the pre-folklore. And I think that Red is probably like the stories she's excited to share the most right now, knowing her like really deeply as I do.
Because
we're best friends and
yes. So
everybody knows that. Yeah, I don't remember why I was so sure that Red was coming next, but I was very sure in May that Red was coming next, and I felt it felt really good to be almost all the way right.
Yeah.
We weren't right about a lot of things.
A lot of things we were not right about.
But like I said,
theory was correct.
I felt like that was airtight. And I was like, listen, we're gonna keep making these like wildly insane accusations.
Yeah.
And they're airtight ideas, and yet
they
were all wrong.
They were all wrong.
And I'm not sorry. Yeah. And I won't stop doing it.
No. So my peeps on The Ringer Dish, she did the podcast all about her albums that I love so much.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan Hubbard. He did a really great thing that was like, it looks like Taylor wants to give each
Oh yeah, you sent that
re-record to me. An era.
Which I fully respect.
She's been like pumping out so much content, like way more content than artists usually do, like in this amount. Like it's crazy how much content we've got. We got Folklore, Evermore, and the re-release we record.
And we got Long Pond.
Fearless.
Like,
yeah.
What, and a Long day Pond. Before Evermore?
Right. So we got so much content from her in less than a year. In yeah. like
That's
what?
Insane.
It is insane. And so he's like, you know, she's like gonna give us a breather, which that makes sense. However, I buy that. And she specifically said that the next album she's releasing is Red. That's what she said.
Mm-hmm.
But is it, as we said, a red herring?
Heyo. I mean, listen.
And the only reason I think that could be true
is because 1989 is a summer album. And also because it makes sense business-wise for her to get them out. However, for
me— And the merch!
And the
merch. There is 1989 merch for sale on her site.
You're not wrong. I also, like, as an artist, I very much respect, like, wanting your work to have, and wanting your rights. Yeah, like, I am 1,000% behind the principle of her being like, I want to own my own music.
Yes.
She wrote it. She created it. She wants to own it. And I think she fucking should.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing is stupid, but I'm very glad that she's re-recording it.
I know.
Anyway, but I think that I really respect the idea that she wants to give albums time. Like, you really saw it with Evermore that people did not give it as much.
I did.
Listening. I mean, I did. But
I really did.
It didn't really get the same traction that I think most albums do, because there was just so much all at the same time.
Because we were still digesting not just Folklore, but really Long Pond.
Well, and Long Pond is great. Those are my favorite versions.
I prefer Long Pond to the Folklore originals.
But I think, you know, like, just letting things live for a little bit. We live in this, like, people want things to turn over so quickly and they want instant satisfaction. And, like, the internet has given us all the attention span of a gnat. And so I think, like, her sort of pushing back against that, I very much respect. And I hope that that's what she's doing. But also, I'd love to listen to 1989 this summer. So, like,
I know. Like, we say all of this, and might she surprise us? And I think
there's no way to know.
Here's the thing. With all of this said, if she does surprise us with 1989, I feel like it'll be more like a Folklore Evermore release where it is a surprise. And all of a sudden it's like, it's coming tomorrow. Like, I think if she does it, it will be a surprise. But at this point, I don't know. Like, I really don't know. And so I'm just going to get really pumped for Red.
Yeah. And I'm so pumped for Red.
Our 10 minutes of All Too Well. 30 songs that we're getting means I think there's 19 songs on the original that include the deluxe tracks, or maybe even 20. But 10 new songs at the bare minimum, maybe 10 new songs. 10 songs is an album, is a full album. So we are essentially getting Red plus Red 2.0. Yeah. Like, we're getting two albums.
I feel like I'm going to go ahead and book myself a cabin for the weekend in the woods so I can just, like, leave town, listen to Red for 2 days straight in the woods. I don't think there's any other way to do it.
I mean,
you can come if you want.
That sounds pretty great.
I don't think there's any other way to do it.
I want 10 minutes of All Too Well, and I can't wait.
I'm so excited.
And we're for sure getting it, because she put the little red scarf next to the—
Oh, we know.
We know.
We know. It's coming.
We're getting that 10 minute All Too Well, and I can't freaking wait. So, oh, jinx. Mabel just came scurrying down this. Oh, she's like, you started without me. How dare you?
Mabel, what's your damage? Get on the couch then.
Mabel. Conjunction, junction, what's your function?
You can get on the couch. That's a chord.
Here,
you can do it.
Remember Schoolhouse Rock.
Everybody here in the basement remembers Schoolhouse Rock.
I love Schoolhouse Rock.
Me too.
Mabel Bear, you can do it. I believe in you.
There's a cord in her way, so she can't. But you can literally
get on the couch.
Everybody listening is like, what the fuck? I don't care about this.
They're like, anyway. So that's the Taylor update. You probably won't be hearing a ton about Taylor.
But you also might.
You also might.
Taylor time is near and dear to our hearts.
Let's just say that Taylor time was, like, at its peak because of all the craze.
Yeah. It is my fault.
We got swept up. It's my fault. The world to know it's entirely Steph's fault.
Okay, however.
I was just a casual. No, I mean, I love Taylor, but I was not the fan to get into all the conspiracies because yeah, I'm not on TikTok.
But I needed you too. And so I started sending them to you. And it's not my fault that then you started doing Googling on your own and you just like really got in there.
I know. And no longer. No, I'm not doing it ever again.
Nobody believes you.
I know.
Nobody here believes you.
As I'm wearing my 1989 shirt.
So, yeah, everybody, we're back on the podcast. Hi. What are we going to talk about today, Jules?
We're talking about, okay, so two things, mm-hmm. really. We're talking about an experience you had on TikTok. We're talking about an experience that you had on TikTok recently that mm-hmm. kind of spurred some really interesting conversation between the two of us that we want to share with you all. Mm-hmm. And with that is this, it goes hand in hand with this theme that has come up lately that's inspired by a convo I have with Holly, this paradox of living as more than bodies. Like you are more than your body. I am more than my body. And we are bodies. Like mm-hmm. we are bodies. We are not physically in existence. Our soul, our spirit, our essence, our energy, whatever you believe in, like whatever makes us, like we're simply not here without our bodies. Yeah. And so it's a both and. It's of living as more than a body and living in and with our bodies as one with our bodies and appreciating our bodies and respecting our bodies because our bodies and us are one and the same.
Yeah. I think that, you know, to not dive into it too much yet, but like we in the body image, body healing space, like a lot of times there's this idea that like, I'm not my body. I am more than my body. Like, you know, really trying to push away from the objectification and the self-objectification. But the thing is that the idea of separating self from body is kind of like what got us into the problem to begin with.
Inherently objectifying. In a different way. The sentiment still sticks, right? The sentiment's still important. But like, yes, we are more than. And here's where I think actually it's a tweak.
Yeah.
I am more than my appearance.
Yeah. I think that's right? A huge, big tweak is I'm more than my appearance because the reality is that I am my body. She is me. That's why when I talk about my body, I use my personal pronouns of she, her. And I don't want to view my body as separated from me because I spent most of my life not aware of my own body, being so mentally separated from my body that's how I ended up down the road of having eating disorders and all of these control issues and mm-hmm. feeling very mm-hmm. objectifying towards myself.
Right. So we see how this work is so nuanced. Mm-hmm. And that's honestly why I love having the podcast because there's only so much you can write.
For
period,
sure.
Right? You know, just write on Instagram alone, but write. So much of it needs to be discussed, needs to be like have like, in conversation because it is so nuanced.
It's all a gray area.
Yeah.
It's so nuanced. It's so complex. And I think that we as people have a tendency to want to make everything black and white, to make everything a yes or a no.
And it's not.
And it's not. And everything is not that way. Like it's just not part of the conversation to be able to say, yes, this is right. No, this is wrong.
Right.
I think, you know, it just takes a lot more than that.
Yeah. And like what one person needs to hear to heal or like what, like one certain framework or, you know, lens that is going to really help you won't be the same thing that helps me and mm-hmm. vice versa. And so I think that's why it's important we bring all sorts of different perspectives into this conversation, you know? But mm-hmm. I really do think like it is that tweak of I am more than my appearance.
Yeah, I think
and
that's
there's nothing
super
wrong
powerful.
With our appearances, right? Like there's nothing wrong with that.
And you're,
but we are more than that.
Yeah. And like I think that it's understanding that like there's nothing wrong with liking your appearance, with learning to love your appearance even, mm-hmm. to embrace your own beauty, to understand that comes from a visual and an emotional like space. I think that some people just will be like, this is what works for me. And so this is what it's supposed to be for everyone else in this healing journey. And it's just so not linear that way.
No.
There's got to be space for everybody to understand in their own way because we all while we have so many similarities in our stories, all of our journeys with our bodies and our understandings of self are like so unique and so personal, and the traumas are all our own.
Yeah.
And so there's not one right way to heal from it, and there's not one path that you need to follow, which is why we like, again, like you said, like why we have the podcast, why we want to keep talking to people, and why it's interesting week after week to talk to different people, because we all have different perspectives and needs.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But I love the framework of I'm more than my appearance.
I'm more than my appearance. Right, because yes, we're more than our body, because our soul and our spirit and our energy and our essence and who we are and how we interact with the world and make people feel like that is transcendent to our physical bodies. Absolutely, right? Like we could look any certain way, but like who we are as people transcends that. And so that's what that gets to, right? Yeah. But I don't want to ever discount our bodies in that way. You know, I don't want to.
I don't.
And again, it's like not separating ourselves from our bodies, because we literally aren't here without our incredible bodies.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we don't walk through life. We don't experience.
I don't
things.
See. I don't hear. See, I don't breathe. Yeah. I don't speak.
And I don't think. I am not here without my body. And my body is this beautiful instrument that I have been given, this home to have. You know, I'm a divine spirit having a human experience, and I am not here having this human experience without my human body.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Like our energy, our soul is so freaking, and whatever you believe in spiritually, is so incredible. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
our body is incredible.
We're not here without it. Right. Absolutely.
The things that the human body,
our body is phenomenal,
can do is bananas, especially the, you know, the female body being able to reproduce, to build another body just out of cells.
Our mere existence
is incredible.
Yeah.
And like, just, I could go down a black hole of like thinking about all
Holly
of that.
And I go down a black hole on her podcast episode. So if you guys want to like venture down that black hole, that's there for you. I don't know if it's out already or not at the time of this coming out, but you can check it. You can check and see.
Yeah, check out Holly's.
You can
podcast.
Check and see Holly's podcast, Return to Wholeness. If it's there, then if you want to go down that black hole, go on down.
Yeah, go on down.
You can go on down. But where we also wanted to take this conversation is into a recent experience that Steph had on TikTok.
Yeah. So as you all know, I really love TikTok. I had not ever planned on making a TikTok because
she was a voyeur.
I was a voyeur.
You're like Alex on Instagram.
Yeah. I just wanted to watch the funny things and send them to my friends. I had like 5 followers. It was just like, I'm golden with this. Like,
you're mostly there for Taylor Swift TikToks.
I'm there for Taylor Swift conspiracies.
And are they called that? Swift Talks?
Yeah. And like videos of dogs doing funny things. Like,
we love it.
The elder emo genre I'm into. Anyway, but I kept being sent this video, and it was this woman, and she was talking about how she, you know, she was interested in boudoir photography, but it was always done like from the male gaze. It was done for a male partner when you're getting married, whatever. And she was like, what would it look like if it was done from the female gaze? And a lot of people sent it to me because that's what I do. So surprising.
Oh, what would that be like?
What would it be like?
We know what that is.
I was like, okay. Once the like 10th person had sent it to me, I was like, all right, I'm going to respond. I'm going to make a TikTok. I did it last week. And I... at the time of this coming out, it's like a month old. But anyway, I made this video and I was just like responding to her video of like, what would it be like? And I was like, hi, I'm who you're looking for. Like, that's called a goddess session. You know, we step into our power and celebrate our bodies, and it's all from the female gaze. And then I posted, you know, like a slideshow of my photos, of goddess session photos. And there were several that were, I mean, most of them had women in underwear, but also there were several that were nude that I had posted all of these like on Instagram. They were censored, all the things with a little paintbrush that I do, if you've ever seen it. But it got taken down for being sexually explicit. They got taken down for sexual content and nudity. And I was like, what the fuck? This is not sexual.
Right.
It's inherently not sexual. And I had to...
the male gaze makes it inherently sexual.
The male gaze makes it inherently sexual.
Whenever there's like a female body on display.
Exactly.
Because they're seeing a sexual object mm-hmm. and they're dehumanizing us mm-hmm. instead of seeing a person, a human being.
Yep. And it was super frustrating because I kept taking like one photo out at a time and I had to edit and re-upload it, I think, 4 times.
Oh my God.
Eventually, I ended up taking out all of the photos that were nude, even though some of the ones I included where women were wearing a clothing type, like you could see more in those than you could some of the nude photos. And I was just like, this is so bonkers to me because these are not sexual. These are not, these are not like seeking or like sexual solicitation, if I can speak. Like these are not like showing acts of sex. And I was just like, this is so objectifying when literally what I'm trying to post and share with the world is these photos of women, the exact opposite from the female gaze, highlighting, their faces, their joy, they're showing actual emotion, their bodies are there, but they look real. They're not edited or photoshopped. They're not posed to hide their bodies. And the internet is just like, no.
Well, and I think, and I'm not an expert on this because I'm not on TikTok, but from what I understand from just seeing a few TikToks kind of about this type of stuff is that creators in thin bodies mm-hmm. will post photos of them that are very,
very bare.
Very bare.
Yep.
And they are able to stay on TikTok.
I mean, yeah, this is something across the board. Like, this is an issue with Instagram as well. I know the Instagram algorithm, I don't know if it's still doing it, but I know at one point the AI built into it was scanning your photo frame to see how much skin was showing. So you post a fat body wearing the same thing as a thin body, but it's like a bikini, like you are inherently going to have more pixels taken up by skin content
right.
in a fat body than a thin body. And so those fat bodies get flagged and the thin bodies don't. They're allowed to stay. So not only is the AI that they've built to scan these things inherently anti-fat, but also the people running it are allowing these things because I also submitted that TikTok for like review. I was like, hey, I don't think that this really like should be considered sexual content. It's not. And they were like, nope, it is. We say it is. And I think it just goes to show like, number one, it was a vast array of body sizes, body types, skin colors, all of the things. But it was women's bodies and it was women not posing for the appreciation or like seeking value from men. Mm. That's not why these images were created.
No.
And it's been very interesting because once that video was able to stay up, like no brag, but it's gotten like a ton of views.
Yeah,
I'm like
yeah.
basically a TikToker now.
Hey.
Very not true. I don't.
Well, a month from now when this comes out, maybe you will be.
Maybe I'll be singing a different tune. Maybe I'll be a big TikToker in a month, but.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of work. Anyway, but the comments on it have been so amazing because all of these women are like, why am I crying looking at this? Like, these women look joyful. They look like me. They look realistic. And I had somebody comment and be like, so the difference from the male gaze to the female gaze is that we look joyful. We get to look like people. And I was like, yeah, kind of.
That's like that gives me the chills. Hey, friends. So all summer long, I've been on a mission just to think, okay, how can I help as many women as possible come home to their bodies and overcome that internalized body shame that we all know, unfortunately, all too well? And so I'm excited to announce my latest and greatest. It's a 14-day program called the Body Image Boost. And it's for women who are ready to know what it means to live without body shame so they can feel peace in their bodies and thrive in their lives. I am running this amazing program with my good friend and coach colleague, Holly Toronto, and it's August 1st through 14th. This program is going to be super fun. It's just $29. So really, it's one of those like no-brainer things. If you don't want to waste another moment believing that you aren't completely 100% worthy of living that kick-ass life you're desiring because you feel like you need to lose weight, right? This program is designed to be bite-sized, but powerful. So it'll actually fit into your busy schedule. You're going to learn how to let go of old stories that are keeping you stuck in body shame, how to embody new, more empowering paradigms about your body that support you in thriving in the body you have today, and learn how to feel more connected and partnered with your body more than you ever have before. Here's how it works. Every day from August 1st to 14th, you're going to get an email from Holly and myself. We alternate between doing a video, journaling, meditations each day. And nothing is more than like 10 minutes. So again, it is powerful. And we're going to actually take you through our 4-part homecoming framework that will really help you, again, build connection and empowerment with your body. So one day you'll get a video introducing a topic and having education. The next day, journaling prompts to dive into that. The next day, a powerful meditation to wrap it all up before we move on to the next topic. Ooh, it's going to be so good. If you want to learn more about the entire curriculum, what you can expect on each day, and of course, to enroll in this awesome program, you can head to the link in our bio. It's julesandhallcoaching.com/14-day-body-image-boost. We are so pumped. $29. It also includes a private Facebook community for those 14 days where you'll get to have live access to Holly and myself for any questions and challenges that you have. So, check it out, the Body Image Boost. We're so psyched. It starts August 1st. So get your butt in that program and I'll see you there. A word that comes to my mind when I see your photos that I think if I'm going to look at those versus some typical male gaze boudoir.
Yeah.
Is the word liberation and freedom.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, oh, so through the female gaze, it's liberated people.
We are free.
But through the male gaze, it's like we're constrained and we're under their power and their rule, kind of. You know what I mean?
Well, we're
like,
put into a box.
Their expectations, what they find sexy, to please them.
Absolutely.
It's all about them instead of us being liberated and powerful beings in our own selves.
And it's this thing that's really interesting that I see happen with clients a lot where, you know, I'll have these women who are like, I really want to do a goddess session. Like, all of your photos look so beautiful. I see body types that look like mine, but I'm like, I could never look like that. Like, these women look beautiful, but I don't look that way. And they don't understand where that disconnect comes from. And I'm like, well, we view ourselves through the male gaze, but we are viewing other women through the female gaze. We're not applying those expectations and those pressures to other women. So we are much more able to see their beauty, their magic, their power, their liberation. And it's so hard for us to attach all of those same values to ourselves because we have been trained and brought up by diet culture and the patriarchy to view ourselves as how we are valuable to men, how we are valuable to society, how we show up. And all of that really lives under this male gaze perspective.
Which is very objectifying.
Very objectifying.
And sexualized. And sexualized. Someone posted this on Instagram. I think it was a TikTok that they posted on Instagram. Anyways, it was this video of this woman. It was amazing. And the whole idea, the whole like caption or whatever behind it was like, so we need to cover up our bodies because men can't control themselves if they see us in a bikini or in like a revealing top or spaghetti straps or like whatever. So we had to cover up because men can't control themselves if they see us like that. Why are we letting men like control countries and nations?
Damn.
I was like, oh my God. Yeah. She's like, wait a minute. So men can't control themselves around just like women's bodies, period. Like if there's like too much shoulder showing or like cleavage or like midriff or whatever. But we're allow them to like somehow control entire governments
and groups of people. That
I was like, so they can't control themselves around women, but they can control.
Like I can't wear spaghetti straps in front of a man in a suit, but he could run a nation.
But he could start a war.
Yeah, he could have like nuke codes.
Yeah.
Cool.
That I thought would really put it into perspective.
It's very true.
You hear that so often with dress codes. And yeah. We talk about that with Lindsay or it was Lexi Kite, who's on our podcast, but like Lindsay and Lexi talk about this all the time in their book More Than a Body. They talk about it. And it's so true. It's like dress codes just reinforce that we are objects to be looked at and that like mm-hmm. we had to cover ourselves up for the boys.
Yeah.
And that in itself is just so objectifying. And so in and of that itself, it's just like, no, you have to teach boys, men, to see females, to see women as human.
Absolutely. And that's the thing is that's where you can really see a lot of it start to begin is like, I saw another TikTok of like a dad being like, why would I tell my daughters like, hey, your uncle so-and-so is coming over. Like, you got to change out of those shorts.
Ew. Like, that's so gross.
But that's such a thing, right? Of like, people are coming over to the house. You need to cover up. And I...
Like, stop and think about what that means. It means your uncle would look at you from a... Ew.
Well, and that's the thing is like this man was saying like...
That like you could ever be sexualized to your uncle is disgusting.
Well, and I think that it's not necessarily just that it's their uncle, but like any other person.
I'm just saying, I'm using that as an example of this story.
But I think that...
any person.
The idea that you... It's like you shouldn't be having a person over to your house who's going to be looking at your daughters. Like,
ew.
You shouldn't have to have your daughters cover up because it shouldn't be about them appeasing other people. No. And... That's what dress codes really teach girls and boys from a young age is that these parts of girls' bodies are like sexual and not for showing on a normal day, which is ridiculous. Cause like I remember it being a huge deal that like we couldn't wear spaghetti straps and couldn't wear halter tops. And it was in middle school and it was like the year 2001. And like that's, you only wanted to wear a halter top. Mm-hmm. But it was like, no, like boys can't see your shoulders. I'm like, are my shoulders sexual? Like, really? Really?
Right. No, you hear people fight back against this, just being like, well, that's just boys. Like, that's just boys will be boys. That's just how they are. That's just how they're programmed. It's like, no.
We're raising them.
We program that way. Mm-hmm. And I get really annoyed when you hear people say this whole notion of like they don't want to have girls, they want to have boys, like boy babies.
Boys are easier
because they're easier to raise. And like girls are like whatever. That in itself is so insanely sexist. It makes my skin crawl. Like I hate my blood boils. I fucking hate it. But what's more than that is like actually, it's equal work to raise mm-hmm. a child, no matter. Yeah. No matter their gender or how mm-hmm. they identify, right?
Yeah.
But I would say actually, boys, a boy, you need a lot of work, and a lot has to go into raising a boy mm-hmm. because you need to make sure that you are consciously raising your boy to not sexualize every single girl and woman that he comes in contact with.
Yeah, and again, I mean,
and honestly, I think that's probably hard to do in this world.
It's very hard to do because of the patriarchy. Right. It's what we say, you know. Like this is a conversation I've had with men in my life of like them not understanding why I'm against the patriarchy. Like I'm not against like men in general. Like
I love men
individually, especially. Yeah. Like I think they're great. I love men. You know, it's like that quote from like Cher. Like men are the coolest, but like.
Are they the coolest?
I don't need one. No. Like they're very not like
we're all cool.
We're all very cool, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. regardless, like I've had this conversation of like I am very much against this system, the patriarchy that is telling us all who we are supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's telling men and boys that they are supposed to look at girls. That like, oh, well, if girls are covering that up, that means that I'm supposed to be looking. I'm supposed to be paying attention to that. Like that shouldn't be showing. It instills this idea in boys that they should look when those things are available to mm-hmm. view. Mm-hmm. And we are the ones teaching our boys how to treat girls like sexual objects. Mm-hmm. So the patriarchy is this entire system that oppresses all of us and tells all of us how we are supposed to be and who we are supposed to be.
Yes.
And that's why it's like, it's just as important to undo this learning that we've all done of dieting, of like sexualization, of like objectification, all of these things are so important to unlearn in boys and girls because it affects everybody negatively. Mm-hmm. Because also like it's, you know, it's training boys, right? That they're supposed to not have emotions. They're supposed to be strong men. They're supposed to look a certain way as well.
Yeah.
They're supposed to have abs and whatever the hell else. And like,
I think the emotional part of that is especially damaging.
It's so damaging.
It's like, oh, because that in itself is dehumanizing.
To tell men that they're not supposed to be emotional creatures when they are just as emotionally valid as women is so painful and so dehumanizing. And, you know, I think it's really important to think about this side of things too, because like it's easy on like one side of feminism to only focus on how much women have been oppressed. But like the systems are oppressing men too. They just are benefiting way more from the system than we are. But they don't always realize that they're being told what box to get in as well. It's fucked.
It's fucked.
It's so fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all this really boils back down to this idea of us needing to do the work to humanize ourselves and others.
Yeah.
No matter who you are, no matter how you identify, right? We need to come back to our own humanity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to see each other as humans, to live as humans. And that means that, yes, we're living as more than our appearance. That means that our bodies aren't just inherently sexualized, like sexual things for others' enjoyments, like to like be looked at and whatnot. Like, no, we're human. And it means that our bodies are also incredible. Our bodies are human.
and it's also—
And they're to be appreciated as such.
Exactly. It's also like up to us if and how we want to be seen and share our bodies and all of these things. Like, you know, I'm not confused about the fact that like a goddess session, being nude and being photographed is not going to be liberation for every woman.
Right.
Like, I think that for so many of us, we were raised and instilled with this sense of shame in our bodies, especially if you live in a fat body, if you live in a marginalized body of any kind, like, we were raised to feel shame about these things and to also, again, separate self from body. And it's so damaging to live that way because I know that I was so separated from my body. I mean, it was like such a level of disassociation that when I started coming back to connecting with my body, I found scars that I never realized I had. Like I had to like get to know my own body. I realized that like, you know, the pain that I had from a car accident was much more severe than I had led to myself and everyone else to believe when it happened. Like so many things were going on with my body that I was not mentally aware of because I had separated self from body.
Yeah.
And in a way, I had fully objectified myself. I called my body it. I, you know, was not considering my body to be me. Mm-hmm. And so it can be really damaging on such a severe level to do that. And at the same time, like there are so many levels to the separation of body and spirit that like we need to heal the relationship between the two and come back to that connection over control.
It's why I love the intuitive eating framework. It's because it's a very gentle way, a very like gentle approach of coming back to that connection. Because that's ultimately really what it is, right? It's saying, hey, we've been so disconnected in so many ways. And one of those ways is, you know, through dieting, trying to control, looking outside of ourselves for all the answers of how much to eat, what to eat, when to eat, you know, and we outsource the basic things as hunger and cravings and fullness and with exercise too. It's like, oh, I have to do this rigorous of exercise, and we don't actually listen to our bodies. It's just totally controlled by the outside, right? Yeah. Totally controlled. And so intuitive eating is this beautiful framework, right, that brings us back into our bodies. And we regain that connection, that trust, that respect for our bodies. And so it's a beautiful way that we begin to come back together, to come back into our bodies, to live as our bodies. And in Homecoming, the like kind of higher level program that Holly and I do together, there's an entire pillar. So there's four pillars in the program, each is 2 months long. There's an entire pillar that's all around embodiment.
Mm.
And so it's like these really powerful practices of like coming back into our bodies. So we you know, start with intuitive eating, but this takes it further.
Yeah.
And it's really about like connecting with these more subtle cues in our bodies. And I mean, our emotions are so intelligent. These subtle feelings we have, these inklings, our intuition lives within our bodies.
Yeah.
And so when we're able, so being disconnected from our bodies and living in that space of self-objectification, like it strips us of so much. And this internal wisdom and intuition and knowing is one of the biggest things too that really gets taken away from us because we no longer have access to it when we've separated so much. It's why when like you were saying you were doing all of healing work, you're like, I found these scars, never knew I had, because you were so separate that you were able to kind of like disconnect from them.
Yeah, not even see them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's why ultimately we care about this work so much, right? Like that's why I care about this work. It's really not about food. And it's really not about looking in the mirror. Again, great if you look in the mirror and you're like, I love it, whatever. Cool. But for me personally, that's not why I do this. Like those are little tiny parts of it, but it's actually about what this work unlocks. And the same thing with this podcast, right? It's about when you actually do this work, it's about what it unlocks. And what it truly unlocks is you coming home to your truest self. You coming home to that connection. You coming home to your body's incredible intelligence. You coming home to your emotions, your intuition.
Yeah.
And it's why I see so many clients make major changes in their lives. Because for the first time, they're able to really be in touch with what they actually are passionate about. What they really value. And they have the courage and the confidence to go do the thing because they have come home to their worth.
Yep.
And they know that they have what it takes to go after the life that they really want to live. But all of that is clouded when we are in this place of disconnection.
Yeah. It's like you can't really be present for your life without the connection to yourself.
And even just think of this, right? Think about just like everyday life or think about going on vacation and even just having this low-key stress, even for you if it doesn't feel all-encompassing, this low-key stress, this low-key distraction, this low-key guilt, this low-key worry about calories in, calories out, what I should eat, what I shouldn't eat. How do I look right now? Oh, should I exercise? I didn't exercise today. Oh, I should go for a run. Oh, I should. It's like even most people have some sort of ticker like that going through their brains because of the world that we live in.
Yeah. Like, what do I look like in these shorts? Maybe I should have worn that instead. I shouldn't have packed this. I should have
packed
the
other one. Don't eat too many cookies. Don't eat, you know, too much pasta salad. Like, it can seem like little, but if that's always on your mind and it's always this little thing, it's just taking up space and it is this low key stress. And so, you know, for some people that feels big and they're like, no, it's huge. I hate it. But for some people it's smaller, but if it's there, it's there. And we deserve to live free from that. Like you deserve just to be present.
It's even no matter how quiet or loud the voice is, you don't have to live with that separated voice inside of your head. Mm-hmm. Like that's the whole point. It hit me while I was driving over here this morning. If you live in Columbus, Ohio, or maybe other places, you know about Anthony Thomas Chocolate. It's the fucking bomb. And I live very close to one. And my boyfriend and I went and got some of it. And I freaking love these dark chocolate things. And I remembered for whatever reason, because I like ate the last one last night. And I remembered buying them when I had come home for my sister's wedding, which was the last time I was very deeply in my eating disorder, and getting a few of them and literally cutting these little chocolates into smaller pieces because I was telling myself I could not eat the whole thing. And this is like a square inch of chocolate. And I was like, no, I better cut this into four because I can't trust myself to eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's like these really little things that you realize you're like, I was holding myself back from eating one chocolate and instead ate a quarter of it. And that only made me more obsessed with eating the rest of it.
Yeah.
But like that was misery. I love chocolate.
Yeah.
I was cutting it up into smaller pieces. It was already small.
And the guilt and stress that we feel around food is way worse for our health than like any food could be. Like the guilt and stress is mentally, emotionally, and physically disruptive and damaging.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts us. Like when we're able to let go of that stress, let go of that guilt, I mean, it's amazing what happens to our health and well-being because of that.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I posted on my Instagram stories recently. It kind of just hit me in a funny way. I got some of the golden Oreos.
Oh yeah.
I love those golden Oreos. They're so, I prefer them. Honestly, I just love them. I just love how they taste. And I bought some at the grocery store. I was like, that just looks really good. So I bought some. And in the past, would never have even bought them. But like if I had bought them or they were in the house or
bought them.
Listen, I would have been like, oh, only have a couple. Julie, only have a couple. And I would have eaten probably the whole container.
Because you would have been obsessed with them.
My mind would have been like, don't eat it. Probably want, oh, no, I shouldn't. And then like, oh, it would have been a full, I probably would have had the entire freaking carton. In a day, maybe 2 days, but probably the first day that they were eating the house.
I would have eaten all of them in the first day because I would have been obsessed with telling myself not to have them and so constantly going back.
Yes, exactly. And you feel so out of control and powerless and then you
hit a point where then you just go, fuck it, I'm going to finish the whole thing.
Right,
so it's not here anymore.
And you're like numbing out to the whole experience. You're not even tasting them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so funny because I still have a container of them in my pantry that I probably got like 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah.
And like here, like, I don't want them every day. They're right there. And I open the pantry every single day to eat stuff. And I see them and I'm like, oh yeah, I could have Oreos right now. And more often than not, I'm like, no, that's not what I want right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have them. But sometimes I do. And I'll put some in a bowl. And I'll pour my glass of milk. I'm like, oh great, I'm going to have some Oreos and milk. And like last week, I had two. And listen, I could have had more than that. That's totally fine. It's just in this instance, I had two dipped in my milk. And I was like, that was great.
That felt good.
I'm like, that was fucking perfect.
And the idea isn't that you're always going to eat two.
No.
And you're always going to have, I think that it can sound a lot like you're going to have this innate control where you only eat two Oreos.
It's empowerment to eat what's going to feel good.
Exactly. And it's not, the idea is to break that obsession over not eating it because that allows you to be free to eat what feels good to you as opposed to being like, I am only allowed to have this much.
Right.
You know, and that's you create that stress cycle in you that you don't finish and you're constantly, even if you finish the Oreos, the stress of eating the Oreos or not eating the Oreos is all there cycling around in your head and your body and you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so unnecessary to live that way. But we have been trained to live that way and that we can't trust ourselves.
Right.
And that we don't know our own bodies and we can't listen to our own body's cues.
It's amazing what happens when you actually make pieces of food, which is exactly what the process of intuitive eating does.
Mm-hmm.
I love seeing my clients go through it. It's so, because I get it. Because they get so excited because they're like, oh my God. Like I had a client who was like, I made my mom's recipe of cookies. Like usually, like, oh, I would make them. They'd be gone like in a day or two. Like it would be a whole thing. And she's like, oh my God, they were on the counter. I enjoyed. They were so good. My family enjoyed them. They were, you know, delicious. And then I was like, hey guys, like the cookies are going to go stale. So eat them now if you want them. They're going to go stale like by the end of the day probably, right? So it's like, she's like, eat them now or got throw them out. She goes, never in my life have I ever thrown out cookies. But she ended up having to throw them out because they went stale. Because they were just like, but they were out on the counter. Like they, you know?
Yep.
And so it's so cool when they have that experience because like I get it. Mm-hmm. I get what it's like to go from feeling like that's impossible. It's impossible to keep Oreos in the pantry for more than a day.
Yeah.
It's impossible to only eat however many Oreos feels good to me. And the other day that happened to me too. I put the other four back in the package. I'm like, all right. I was allowed to eat them. I just didn't want, I was like, no, I'm satisfied. I'm fine.
Yeah.
That was not in the realm of possibility for me, you know, back in my dieting and disordered eating days. That just was not in the realm of possibility.
No.
And even that idea frustrated me. And so I was like, that's not possible for me.
And it would have been impossible for me to understand that I could keep foods in my house like and not be constantly thinking about them, constantly like physically holding myself back from going to eat them. And also that if I did eat like 10 Oreos at a time, because like shit happens, if I did, that I wouldn't be berating myself for it later. That I wouldn't be like, oh no, I have to throw the rest of the container out because I can't be trusted. Oh no, I am bad because I ate too many Oreos. Like, I think that it's this really bigger like grace that we have for ourselves and connection that we build of understanding that, like, again, we are our bodies. Like, we are allowed to be the ones in charge of what our bodies need and how our bodies feel. And listening to ourselves, because sometimes you do need more Oreos and sometimes you don't need more Oreos. Mm-hmm. And it's gonna change day by day. Mm-hmm. And there's no diet, no outside force that knows how many fucking Oreos you need on a Wednesday versus a Friday.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
Exactly.
Like that's the truth. You know, it's about being empowered in our bodies. And we get to be empowered in our bodies when we are actually connected to our bodies. And we're connected to our bodies when we're not living separating ourselves from our bodies. And we're not living in the world of objectification.
Exactly. And we're, you know, not viewing ourselves through the male gaze, through a patriarchal lens. And questioning these things.
Right.
Like, I think a really big piece of it is understanding that you're allowed to ask why of all of these things that have been norms in your life and why and where it's coming from and why it makes you feel the way that it does. And if that aligns with you.
Yep.
Because a lot of it didn't fucking align with me.
Yeah. Yeah. And when we think of like the male gaze or any external gaze outside of us, it's like, we want to get rid of any sort of external gaze.
Yeah.
You know, and instead be gazing like from the inside.
Exactly.
I want to be living in my body, gazing at the world, not externally gazing at me from this weird lens. Yeah. Not to say that you can't like look at yourself. Like, I'm not saying that, right?
No, you totally can and you should.
Yeah. Look at yourself. Like, admire your amazing self. Absolutely. But it's about living as the person looking out and experiencing the world.
Yeah.
Instead of always being operating from being under a microscope of just living to be seen.
Well, and I think that that's, you know, that's the thing I love the most about my work, right? Is like from the outside, it appears like just a photo shoot, but it is not.
It's not.
It's so much like I try to always remind my goddesses, my clients that, you know, we're here to celebrate them. Like, we set some intention when we begin your shoot and we are there to celebrate you, all that you've become, all that you're becoming, because you're a constant work in progress. You are a work of art and a work in progress at the same time. And it's about how you feel when you're there. Because the reality is that like, we very rarely see ourselves all lit up, laughing, being honest, being open and vulnerable and ourselves. We don't usually see that. Other people see it. And that's why we are generally the hardest on ourselves. But I get to capture you in those moments. And because you're in that experience, because you're feeling all of the things, because I'm hyping you up, because you're being liberated, because you are embracing your joy, I'm capturing that. And so then you have this tangible object, right? Which is the photograph to remind you of the feeling. So it's like you were saying, it's about you gazing outward. Like, it's 100% about you tapping into these feelings inside of yourself. Mm-hmm. And then reminding yourself again and again with these photos that we took that you are capable of those feelings, that you know how to really be present in your body and feel like yourself and feel powerful and strong and beautiful and all of the things all at once. That's the magic. That's the whole reason why goddess sessions exist.
Yeah.
It's for the feeling.
And so with this, we want to invite you. You know, if you're listening to this and you're like, man, what they're talking about really resonates, then book a goddess session with Steph and experience this for yourself.
Yeah.
And if you're like, man, I'd love to make pieces of food, but that just seems so hard, because I'll tell you what, it is hard to do on your own.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fucking hard to do on your own. Then join me inside the Intuitive Body Blueprint. Like, we have resources for you so that you don't have to do this alone.
Yep.
Right? So book a goddess session, join the Intuitive Body Blueprint. Like, we have these amazing programs and experiences to help you take the inspiration from the podcast and actually transform your life.
Yeah.
Because the podcast can be amazing inspiration and education and empowerment, but to really integrate this on a deeper level and really transform who you're being and how you're experiencing the world, to transform your relationship with your body and with food and with exercise, and to go that next level deeper, it takes more than just listening to the podcast.
You got to walk the walk.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, we just would love to invite you guys into our experiences and what we have to offer. We would love to get to meet you on that actually very personal level and support you on that very personal level. We have your back.
And we're here for you.
We're here for you. So with that, thanks for tuning in to another week of the Babes Mint.
Thanks. We love you. Bye. Thanks so much for tuning into another episode of The Babes Mint.
We hope you're feeling a little more at home in your body and inspired as hell.
If you are ready to change your relationship with your body and yourself, we're here for you.
Snag a goddess session with Steph.
Or check out Jules' free masterclass to free yourself from diet culture for good.
The links are on our website to learn more and sign up.
And of course, if you loved this episode, we'd so appreciate it if you spread the love a little bit.
Share the app.
Rate the show.
Leave a review.
Subscribe.
You know what to do. Until next time.
Thanks. We love you. Bye.